Hello and welcome to a new edition, a brand new edition of the Capital Notes podcast. And I sat here and struggled for a good 45 seconds trying to figure out how to start this podcast because we haven't done one for so long.
No.
We're back.
And we didn't get laid off.
We're not, right. Well, first of all, we weren't fired.
No.
We didn't just go away completely. We just had scheduling problems.
Yeah, we just had better things to do.
Well, I had a child to deal with, and then I wasn't here full time, and then I couldn't find you.
I was lost.
You were lost.
Now I'm found.
Now you're found. I think there's a song in that. I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio. That is, as always, Anthony York, the editor of Capital Weekly. And, wow, we're doing a podcast again. We're going to reinvigorate the podcast. We're going to get going again. We're going to...
Juggling clowns, dancing girls, the whole bit.
State budgets. The whole...
The big three.
The whole the whole works.
The whole three-ring circus, right.
So if you are one of the 8, 9, 7 listeners, 10 that we've had, and you actually have clicked on this podcast to listen to it, thank you, and we'll try to come back on a timely basis here and tell you about the latest goings-on in politics and policy. Anthony will play with things here in the studio and put his gum under the seat.
Badminton. Desk badminton.
Desk badminton.
You were saying.
So let's talk about politics, Anthony, now that we've rambled. I think we're only going to talk about the state budget this time, right? Because really, what's going on?
Well, is the state budget going on?
It's barely.
It's a little unclear what's going on. Senate Republican leader Dave Cogdell told the press club this week that he was optimistic a budget could be approved by August 1st.
Boy, that's some serious optimism.
And then the next day, the assembly went on vacation. Right. that sort of sums up, in a nutshell, the juxtaposition of those two events sort of underlies and illustrates where we are with the budget negotiations.
Well, we're clearly sitting here as the week comes to an end with not a heck of a lot to show in terms of progress on a budget. You know, we've got to – let's remind our 4 listeners, 7 listeners. I've got to come up with a number there. Let's remind them we have a $15 billion shortfall. We are now almost 3 weeks late on a new state budget. The governor and the 4 legislative leaders met on Thursday for one of the only big fives they have done and met a couple of hours and then promptly adjourned as the governor went to meet the president up on the fire lines in Northern California. We still got a huge gap. I mean, I don't know how this is going to – you know, there's not a person I talk to. You tell me. That I typically talk to during budget years who has any idea how you really fundamentally get across this hurdle this year because you've got Democrats saying you absolutely want tax increases. We're not going to cut anymore. Republicans have said, are you kidding me? We're not going to do tax increases. And the governor, I don't really know how to describe the governor's position. I'm not for tax increases, but everything's on the table. Read into that what you will.
Right. Well, you know, and one big thing that the governor has talked about that you could see potentially as an out is some sort of structural reform. And, you know, would some sort of temporary tax increase, maybe a sales tax increase, maybe closing some of these tax loopholes be acceptable to Republicans if it came with some kind of structural reform? Democrats have balked at those structural reform proposals in the past.
And what we're talking about is changing the budget process, essentially.
Right.
A spending cap or some limitation.
Or changing the primary source of funding. I mean, one of the arguments about why this budget process is so volatile year after year is that the majority of the state budget is dependent on personal income tax. And as a revenue source, the personal income tax, the fluctuations in personal income tax are much greater than other potential sources of income. So there have been ways, proposals and ideas about how to smooth some of the ups and downs, the undulations, if you will, in the revenue influx and the state budget process.
The undulations.
Sorry,
I'm just focused on that now.
Undulations.
But how do you do that? I mean, because, well, first of all, let's look at the ways that budgets are balanced in more functional state governments across the country.
And smaller state governments and less complicated state governments.
Got sales taxes, income taxes, property taxes. Right. Those are your three main sources of revenue in Government 101. Property taxes are off the table. Prop 13 takes care of the property tax proposal. Okay, well, we can talk about that. But, I mean, in general, the conventional wisdom is property taxes aren't part of budget discussions in the state.
Right.
Sales taxes, lots of people yell about sales taxes. Now, we could talk about that the sales tax might need to be changed. this is the discussion I hear all the time for different services, that we've got a sales tax system that taxes the wrong things. We've become a service-oriented economy, right. And those services don't generally bring any sales tax revenues in.
And that's something that, Senate Leader Don Parada has talked about for years.
Yeah. And then you've got income taxes, which we've dealt with. But, I mean, and let's go back to sales taxes for a moment. There are also complaints that you increase sales taxes, it's disproportionately impacts lower-income people.
Right.
So that's a problem usually with Democrats. And then you've got Republicans with the strict no-tax pledge. I mean, and I have not heard many Republicans publicly say anything that sounded like they would accept a temporary tax increase, which is what you're laying out. So I'm shooting holes in your theory, but how do you do it?
Well, I think you start with termed out legislators, quite honestly. One of the things that term limits has done to this legislature is that it has people looking towards the next election thinking, hey, if I vote for one of these budgets that has a tax increase, if I'm a Republican, or has a budget that has too deep of a cut in services, social services, if I'm a Democrat, I'm toast. I'm toast when it comes time to run for that Senate seat or run statewide. You have a lot of people this year. First of all, you only need two Republican votes, assuming you have all 25 Democrats, to get a budget out of the Senate. And you need six votes to get to the two-thirds vote requirement in the Assembly. And the people who I've talked to are, you know, the lists that they have of potential names who will eventually vote for the budget, they're focused on some of these termed-out legislators who either lost their primaries for higher office in June or are not running for office.
Okay, but now let's break that down a little bit. In the Senate, in the state Senate, right. Where you need 27 votes to pass a budget, which means you need all the Democrats, theoretically, which
right.
is another issue unto itself, perhaps. But you need 25 votes from Democrats, and you need two from Republicans. Now, you can probably get that, and we could come up with a litany of names, termed out people who've seemed amenable in the past, et cetera, et cetera.
People who are furious at their new caucus leadership.
Maybe you should talk about that in a moment. But in the assembly, you need six Republican votes. Can you get six votes with your termed out? Hey, the heck with it. I got to do whatever strategy that you've laid out.
There's a list. Yeah, I mean, there's a list that you know that if you, I mean, I don't want to suggest it here only, but anybody who has a list of which members are termed out can go and sort of and. Cobbled together their own list from sheer chronology of it all. Now, I'm not saying that these termed out legislators are all going to vote for the budget. I'm not saying that that's the arrangement, that there's a deal in place. But I have heard people on both sides candidly talking about that possibility. So if we're looking for a potential break in this gridlock, I think that's where you have to start.
I just wonder, though, if they're Republicans, doesn't that hurt their future prospects in the Republican Party, especially if they've taken a no-tax pledge and you have some kind of tax package?
Well, and that's just it, because some of these people don't have a future. Some of them have lost Republican primaries for Senate races. Some of them have lost county supervisor races. Some of them don't have an immediate future in the Republican Party.
Hmm. So let's go back to something else you threw on the table quite interestingly, going backwards now in the podcast.
Right. Podcast Time War. You need a sound effect.
Is that the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do? Yeah, that's the Wayne's World part.
Yeah,
see?
Yeah.
We're just old enough to know exactly what that was.
Party on, John.
I'm not taking the bait. But you talked about property taxes. What are you talking about?
Well, I think for a couple of years there's been talk of Proposition 13 has locked in both commercial and residential property taxes. So if you buy a house in 1990 and you live in it for 30 years, you're only going to pay
a very small
your base property tax is locked in at the levels at the year at which you bought the house. Same with commercial real estate. Now, there's been a lot of talk, both among Democratic allied groups, namely the California Teachers Association, primarily, and recently some Republican groups.
I know what you're going to say.
About splitting off commercial property taxes from residential property taxes.
The infamous split-roll proposals.
Right. And
where you would let commercial property be taxed more like the market actually does, like it happens in other states, and residential property tax rates would stay that way. But I've not heard a lot of – you say you've heard in some Republican circles that somebody might be willing to consider that?
Well, I don't know if it's a solution for this year, but I do know that it's something that's being talked about. You know, that it's been on the table, that it's been a two-sided discussion. It's not just Democrats trying to jam it through like they did in 2004. And it's a possibility. I mean, is it a possibility to get out of this year's budget? You know, maybe, maybe not. But is it a possibility that we could be voting on an initiative, on a split roll initiative, say, in 2010? Maybe.
Hmm. Maybe. So let's talk about where the governor is in this budget negotiation process. Now, there has been a lot of and the governor's.
Do I look like George Stephanopoulos to you? I don't know because I haven't. Actually, the governor just did a round of state interviews, didn't he? Yesterday.
I would know. Yeah. I wasn't one of them.
Nor was Capital Weekly.
That's a slight
message. They must have lost our phone number. I'll be sending it. I don't know if the governor's press office listens anymore.
Right. Or we'll put the phone number at the end here. Yeah, really, do that. Right. Maybe they'll call us and tell us.
Can we get an 800 number?
But suffice it. But I was going to say that there has been some discussion about what role the governor's been playing in these budget negotiations. And we know in years past he has taken a very, very active role. Let's not forget, when he first came into office, he was calling Big Five meetings with the legislative leaders all the time. He got frustrated. He went down to Southern California. He called them
girly men
for not coming forward and doing what's right on the budget. And then, like last year as well, he backed out of the process a lot. He basically let the four legislative leaders do most of it, and then he would come in some. That's not to say his office isn't engaged. I mean, you know, to go ahead and shoot down the early criticism of you and I saying this, yes, his staff is involved. His administration is involved in watching and letting know what he will accept and won't. But he's not personally been in a lot of these until this Big Five meeting on Thursday and a little bit of that before that. He's met with them one-on-one, and he's gotten criticized some in corners in the state. Some newspaper editorials have taken him to task for not getting in there, rolling up his sleeves, and doing something about it. And what do you think about
that
criticism?
Well, and it's not just that. It's the juxtaposition of that and doing a lot of these national interviews, going on Meet the Press 2 weeks ago, going on
ABC's this week
with George Stephanopoulos on Sunday, that there's sort of more of a focus on the governor as this salesman and pitchman for the, you know, the environmental movement here in California, such as it is. And that's a subject for another podcast.
Well, and he's also been on the fire line.
And on the fire line, absolutely.
Almost to the point where a reporter said something to him up, I can't remember which fire it was because there's so many fires,
right.
Recently said something about him, why is he there? And he said something like, well, this is where the action is. There's no action sitting behind my desk in Sacramento, which you know, it's a joke, but I do think there's a truth to that for the way what he likes or what.
Well, and also, if you're crafting the governor's image, and you, I mean, what's a better image on television of, you know, Sacramento gridlock and the governor out there saying, yes, we're gridlocked and being stuck in gridlock along with everyone else, or the governor out there, you know, engaging with fire chiefs and firefighters, being on the front lines, offering compassion to those who've lost their homes? From an image perspective, there's no comparison as to what the better place is for the governor to be. But there does always seem to be this point in this process, which always drags on beyond the deadline, right about now, right about late July, where folks start getting restless. And, you know, the five reporters that are left in the Capitol Press Corps start asking questions about, you know, why isn't the governor engaged? Why can't he break this gridlock? And that this – there begins to begin to, some restlessness, I guess, is really – And I think this week, you know, we can start to sense that, and we'll see if that helps move this process along here in the next couple of weeks.
You know, but in addition to the restlessness of us in the world of the news business, I mean, I am somewhat fascinated by you know, the way the governor puts out where he stands on the state's financial problems and how to solve the state's financial problems. And I have to say, I mean, people can read into what they want his comments in the Q&A at an event the other day here in Sacramento. But, I mean, the fact that he said, and I'm paraphrasing and I'll get it somewhat wrong and someone will call me, but effectively said, I don't support, you know, I don't like taxes, but everything's on the table. Everything's on the table, but I don't like taxes. And, like, he almost said it twice. And I don't know, you know, I'm not sure what you take out of that. That's a that's like, you know, some people said he was having it both ways. And I have to say, what message is the governor sending about, will he be willing to accept some kind of tax increase, temporary or permanent, as a budget solution?
I think if it lands on his desk, you know, gets through the legislature, absolutely he would. I mean, I think,
so in other words,
I think
if it gets to his desk, not that he would lend his support to it and then go try to bring Republicans over.
Like, that's worked. I mean, tell me one Republican this governor could deliver. I mean,
wait, let me think.
The termed out month.
Well, I'm still thinking. Wait. I'll think of one.
Cue the crickets.
Yeah.
but I do think that this is indicative of the post-special election Arnold Schwarzenegger, this negotiating style, this style of kind of, you know, he was very engaged. And, you know, we mentioned the whole Gurley-Men thing and bringing these initiatives in the special election. He was very confrontational, perhaps too confrontational for some in the first 2 years of his governorship. And now I think the opposite may be true. In some ways, in terms of using his political influence, he's been very kind of disengaged and saying, hey, whatever the legislators come up with, you know, the ball's in their court now. I presented my budget. I've made my proposal. It's their job to come to me now with a proposal. And not getting actively involved in the day-to-day negotiating publicly. You know, like you said, I'm sure on the staff level, it's very clear where the governor – well, it's somewhat clear where the governor is,
right.
You know. But I do think that, you know, there are only maybe, I'm doing some quick math here, 45 people in and around the Capitol, and those are the elected Republicans, who believe that this budget will actually be passed with no tax increases. I mean, do you know anybody else who thinks that, you know, whether you call it fees or closing loopholes or whatever
right.
you know, term of art you want to attach to
right.
it, there's going to be some additional revenue in this budget. We're not going to close this $15 billion gap just
with $15 billion in cuts.
No, absolutely
right.
not.
Right. Well, and the lottery was back into discussion here on Thursday with this Big Five. Apparently, there was a big presentation on lottery issues and Wall Street types in there and others making a presentation.
Right.
You know, and Democrats quickly came out of the meeting and said, well, that's great. We do think there are ways to do something, but not in the current budget year, which is
right.
what the governor had proposed in May, that you just can't get there. And we know Republicans never liked the idea because it was backstopped by a sales tax increase if the voters said no.
Right. Well, and remember, last year's budget was balanced. And I say that using radio air quotes here. Balanced.
I saw them.
Yes,
air quotes.
Yeah. With the sale of Ed Fund, right, this obscure loan guarantee organization that was responsible for $1 billion in revenue to the state.
Well, reduced to $500 million, and then they said, oh, it's got delayed, we can't get that money.
Right.
Right.
Oops, right? So surprise, surprise, that $1 billion that was there on paper to make the budget appear balanced didn't materialize, and so you carry it over to the next year. You know, is that what the – and there's, I think, a lot of skepticism and speculation that that's what this – lottery proposal may be, in part, is a way to balance something on paper that has no possibility of being anything real.
All right, two other budget items, and then we'll just lock out this budget thing for this week. One is this continual discussion, which Democrats have also said we're not interested in, but the discussion keeps popping up nonetheless about getting revenue from borrowing money from pots of money that
right.
have been earmarked for other things, transportation money. You
mental
could take,
health
take
money.
Money out of the mental health initiative. You could take money out of the tobacco tax,
right.
first five
first,
childhood
right.
development programs thing,
right.
because there are several hundred million dollars to a billions, a few, you know, I think it comes to what, $2 billion, $3 billion, if you added it all up, it depends.
But
there is money sitting there that could be borrowed. Now, it has strings attached. We'd have to pay it back. We'd have this. We'd have to get the money somehow. But good gosh, I mean, we've had all these get out of town alive budgets in years past. It's not inconceivable. Democrats have continued to say we don't want to do that. That's disingenuous. But the chatter continues nonetheless.
Absolutely.
That it's easier than raising taxes.
Well, and the two may not be mutually exclusive here. I mean, we're, you know, maybe talking about a smaller tax increase or a series of fee increases or, you know, new levies or fines or fees or whatever it is on services, as you mentioned earlier, something that Republicans can go home to their district and say is not really a tax increase.
That they fought the good fight.
Yeah, I mean, this thing, you know, this thing could get stitched together and probably will be. And I think it is going to be, you know, as you said, a get out alive budget. But you can't. I don't think there are $15 billion worth of gimmicks or borrowing, short-term borrowing, or, you know, at some point you're going to have to get into some either cutting not just fat but real muscle. or increasing revenues.
All right, so then let's end this by being bold and coming up with when we think this is going to happen.
August 11th.
You just right out of the gate before I even got the setup going.
Bold.
Well, you are a bold man, Anthony York. But I mean, I don't. You know, the sense of urgency that it supposedly exists because of the state running out of cash in October, and we have to go to Wall Street and borrow money, and that process has to start in August, and if we don't have a budget by August 1st, then all of this stuff happens. I don't sense any of that urgency at all. I mean, maybe because even if the state controller, John Chung, started the process of borrowing that money, he could stop the process if we got a budget in mid-August.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I was going to say when August 11th is a reasonable date, I was going to say August 15th, for lack of a better term, because it doesn't seem like we're, you know how you start to get that feeling that we're close, that there are three, four outstanding issues?
Right.
We're not. I don't feel that at all.
We're not there.
Yeah.
But I think this is one of those budgets where we might not have that, where the whole thing's going to come together at once. Or you're going to get something artful like the Steve Peace triple flip.
Mm.
You know, something like that. You know,
that's a total insider one, isn't it?
Yeah, you can Google that one. But it's a subject for another podcast. But, you know, if there is motivation out there, remember the Democrats have a convention to go to in Denver the last week in August.
That's
Republicans
right.
have one to go to in Minneapolis the first week in September. So, you know, these things have dragged on, and in the last presidential cycle, I think, went through the Democratic convention, right, in 2004. But I know there's a lot of people who want to go, and that's going to be some real incentive.
Right. All right. So you said August 11th.
I'm
going to say the 14th because the 15th is just too.
$1, Bob. $1.
$1?
No, Price is Right reference. Never mind.
Oh.
Moving on.
Oh, sorry. Got it. Come on down.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that's about it. Although I think we were going to end and send what? You don't want to do it now.
What?
Well, you just waved me off.
I didn't wave you off.
I got to wave off.
All right. Fine. Let's not do it.
All right, we'll just leave it at that. How about that?
Okay.
One subject for the first podcast back. That's
okay.
Fair,
nice
right?
and slow, yeah.
We don't want to overexert ourselves.
No.
Anyway, we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening, and thanks for finding us again. And for the ever-quotable Anthony York, I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time. Ta-da! See, I'll cut that.